After suffering a severe traumatic brain injury, I rewrote one medical exam just to prove that to the medical administration that I was back. My mark actually improved by 10% from the year before. And that just goes to show you the incredible effects that these lifestyle pillars can have on the brain.
Welcome to the Heroic Minds Podcast, where we discover how to get out of our own way, unleash the full capability of our mind, become the hero of our story, and a hero for other people.
From an evolutionary perspective, we've evolved to manage threatening encounters.
I want to do everything in my ability to help them, but they make the call.
We have to do it in a way that doesn't just assume that going faster is going to be the cure-all.
When you suffer and then you come out of it on the other side, you stand a little taller, your voice doesn't shake anymore, your eyes are always up.
Sorry to depress you guys. Self-doubt is par for the course. It's just how you choose to deal with them, react to them, or not react to them.
A little tough love goes a long way, and high expectation also goes a long way. The more you expect of someone, the more they'll do.
I have to keep moving forward. No good comes from going back.
I don't need red tape. I'm not into rules. I'm not into regulation. I'm just going to do this.
Welcome back to the Heroic Minds Podcast. On today's episode, we have Dr. Matthew Galati. Dr. Galati is a traumatic brain injury survivor and medical doctor. In fact, he sustained his traumatic brain injury in the midst of completing medical school. Had to reteach himself how to talk, was in a coma, and so on. He has the goal of making aerobic training a part of brain injury recovery protocol. He is doing this through the Brain Changes Initiative. In this episode, we discuss taking control and ownership over the brain injury recovery process with the five pillars of a brain healthy lifestyle. Further, this could be taken into all sorts of recovery processes, even goal setting. A vital part of this conversation is envisioning the benefits of your interventions. Instead of using rationalized motivation to complete recovery objectives, picture the benefits as you plan and complete your recovery process. One of the intriguing parts of this episode is that Matt not only sees patients today with similar problems and journeys that he went through, he can talk about it on both sides of the fence, being the patient having that traumatic brain injury experience, the care he received, what he did in his recovery. And so he has both sides of the fence to talk about as the patient and as the medical professional. So I think that is really valuable in this discussion. Before we hop into this episode, which many of our usual listeners will know, this conversation is close to my heart because of my journey through a head injury years ago. But before we hop into this exciting episode, we have to give a shout out to our friends at True Local. They continue to impress me. As they're growing, they're maintaining their same incredible product and incredible customer service. That's trulocal.ca, True Local. Check them out. Locally sourced, high quality meat. Now also offering frozen vegetables, frozen fruits. Shows up to a box on dry ice in case you're a few hours late or maybe even a day late. Your product will stay frozen. If you're already a customer, I encourage you to add to your list meatballs, turkey bacon, mango chipotle chicken. And if you also want to give True Local a try, still add those three things to your list, but also use my discount code HEROICMINDS25, all capital letters, to get $25 off a regular size box and $10 off a personal size box. You are going to learn about Brain Changes Initiative in this episode. The link will be in the description so you can check it out and follow along. Alrighty, here we go.
To start, I've always been interested in medicine. It's kind of all I remember wanting to do. I had made it into med school. I was in my second year of med school at the time. And there was a weekend where I was basically home visiting family and friends in Toronto. And my medical school was in Windsor. It was Windsor Western Campus, or Western Windsor Campus. So I was back home visiting friends and family, and I had to be back for a small group session the early, like, Monday morning. I basically got onto the 401, car spun out of control, there was bad weather, hit a tree, and that's where my head injury story began. But in terms of, like, being a medical student, I'd had, like, no previous interest in the brain. I think at one point I was contemplating, like, gynecology. At one point I wanted to be a cardiologist. So yeah, it was like not even on my radar. To recap my accident a little bit, spun out of control, car hit a tree, hit my head either on the tree or on the side of the car, was knocked into a 3-day coma. Luckily, I had a passenger with me at the time, and he was able to actually get out of the car and hail an ambulance. My side absorbed all of the impact. So yeah, I was removed with the jaws of life, woke up from a 3-day coma, couldn't walk, couldn't talk. But at that point in time, I had very, very little insight into how severe my accident or my injury really was. I guess like nobody had really communicated with me early on as to what had actually happened to my brain. I guess they were more communicating with my family at that point. And in my mind, I was just like, oh, I have a concussion. I'm going to go back to school and things are going to be back to normal relatively quickly. So it wasn't until I left acute care and was in the step down unit that, and you know, the swelling and inflammation, my brain had subsided a little bit and I was starting to gain more insight. I was communicating more with the doctors and with my family. So that was when it really hit me like, oh, this is more serious than what I originally thought. So it was, at first, like, you know, again, like I was starting to gain a little bit more insight, but, I wasn't fully aware, as to how severe my deficits and difficulties actually were. So I had, for example, early on, I had a lot of word substitution issues. The area of my brain that was damaged was, actually between the understanding center and the speech center of my brain. They're called Wernicke's and Broca's area respectively. So I could understand everything, people were saying to me. I could understand what I wanted to say back to them. I couldn't articulate it into words, but again, I was missing kind of that insight bit. So I would say things and they probably weren't making a whole lot of sense to other people, but in my mind they were making sense because I knew what I wanted to say.
And you continue to use the word insight. You know, what is it, do you think, in that moment that could have made, I mean, you could go both ends, even a little bit of change or catalytical change in that moment. Was there something there that could have been better? You know, on this podcast and all the conversations we have, we think, okay, how could we look up? How could we make this situation better for ourselves and better for other people?
Yeah, for sure. So I definitely think that it really speaks to, there's a lot of, the stigma is still there. I mean, it was there 7 years ago and, you know, maybe it's a little bit better now and there's a little bit more understanding of the brain, but I really felt like people were like, you know, walking on eggshells around me. The medical professionals, they weren't, I guess there was an assumption that I would have difficulty understanding or comprehending. So nobody actually took the time to explain to me my injury and what had happened and what the consequences were to my brain, what my prognosis was moving forwards, you know, the difficulties that I would have. It was kind of all just communicated to my family, maybe, or maybe in piecemeal. But yeah, there was very little communication with me. And that's definitely something that needs to be changed in medicine. The assumption shouldn't be made that, you know, just because you suffer a concussion or a severe traumatic brain injury, like, you know, you're incompetent or incapable of understanding or making your own decision.
So let's say myself going through that, having a little bit more understanding of what's going on in my brain, what would that impact have? What do you think it would do for patients if they did have this education piece and understanding, you know, maybe while they're in the hospital with their injury, or even when they're circling back, interacting with their doctor through their recovery?
Yeah, I think it would, to be honest with you, start the recovery process a little bit early. I mean, it's like, to some degree, and maybe this isn't the best analogy, but like grieving, in that, you know, there's stages. So you first have to accept your injury before you're willing to make changes or to work on yourself. But, you know, before I knew what my diagnosis was, it was like a month and a half down the line. So, you know, that acceptance piece could have come at an earlier stage. And then I could have, you know, started mentally preparing myself for recovery and doing all of the research that I need to do that eventually did lead to my recovery. Knowledge is power, right? So you're really empowering your patients by giving them the knowledge of their diagnosis and what it is that they need to do to get better from an early stage. And we do know with head injury that, you know, the earlier you start exercising the brain and physically exercising and doing all these things that are brain healthy, the better your eventual outcome is going to be. So earlier intervention is better.
See, the reason I wanted to dive into that was because I see so many people today with head injury of various sorts reach out to myself. And I find that as much as it's humbling and a cool opportunity, and I obviously give just anecdotal information of, hey, this is how my story went, I find it interesting that these people have come to me after already working with their specialists. And so should they not know more? Should they not be empowered? Like you said, knowledge is power. A little bit more so. And that's why I wanted to ask you that question. And I think that's an incredible way to put it, is we can arm these individuals with information that they can then go and utilize. And the one thing I find interesting about your story and mine, and you were well on your way to the doctor that you are today. I wasn't, but we both utilized the internet at the time to say, okay, how can I arm myself with more information and then try a bunch of different things because the injury is so unknown. So I think I thought that was so powerful. So that's interesting. Now, when you did, continuing on your story, when you did start to move in that positive direction, where was it then the story went?
Basically, once I was discharged from the step down unit, I was accepted into Toronto Rehab as a patient there. And it was at Toronto Rehab where I was enrolled into a research study with the Canada Chair of Traumatic Brain Injury, Dr. Robin Green. And what her study was all about, so I was receiving my general therapies that everybody else was receiving in the rehab hospital. But as part of this research study, all of my activities and rehabilitation, allied healthcare work was all intensified. So for example, I was receiving double the physiotherapy, double the occupational therapy, double the speech language pathology that all of the other, you know, just patients that weren't enrolled in this study were doing. As a part of this research study, I had to write a series of neuropsych evaluations, which test your baseline functioning like memory, attention, speed of processing, your cognitive areas or skills. So the first neuropsych exam that I wrote was when I was still a patient at Toronto Rehab and nothing was severely impaired. It was near the end of my stay. So this was after about a month and a half being in the step down or acute care and step down unit. And then after a month to 6 weeks at Toronto Rehab. But it was clear that based on that neuropsych evaluation that I was nowhere close to being ready to returning to medical school or a program, as demanding. So I kind of, on my discharge from Toronto Rehab, they kind of like gently told me like, try to get, back to what you were before as best as you possibly can. But, you know, they gently nudge that like sometimes in these situations, our patients may change their life goals. So luckily being a medical student at the time, I knew where to look for information. So on my discharge and return home, I started delving into the research on my own. And I really learned about five different lifestyle pillars that are absolutely vital to brain health.
Sorry. I wanted to hop in first before, because this is so, you know, we're skipping over what is the catalytical moment in so many stories we have on the podcast. And yes, we're going to get to the science and all that incredible information in a second, but I wanted to focus on that, this decision you had, because a lot of those people that reach out to me are in that position. You were just like, you just had medical professionals say, hey, you might not go back to how you used to be. And I mean, I was told the same thing. But obviously, we know the long-term, you know, the end of your story, and that's not the case. You decided to actually continue to act in the direction of who you wanted to be and who you believed you could be. Why?
Why did I choose to continue along the path in hopes of returning to medical school?
Yeah.
To be honest with you, to some degree, it was... medicine was all I ever wanted to do. And then the other thing was, you know, could I possibly prove everybody wrong and, you know, be that beacon of light and that example for future head injury patients or survivors, to say, hey, look, you can actually do this. You can recover from something like this. I mean, I had reached rock bottom. For me, I had nowhere to go but up, and I figured, why am I gonna just sell myself short right off the hop? Why not try as, you know, hard as I possibly can to get back to where I was before? And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out, but why am I gonna not even try from the start? I have nothing to lose.
And in that journey, is that where you realized you wanted to go into, or at least focus on or potentially specialize in this area? Was that decision somewhat made for you as you went along this journey?
Not really. I wouldn't say so. I think, like, for me, being so close to the situation at the start, and, you know, with the stigma around brain injury, early on in my recovery, and keep in mind, this is 7 to 8 years ago, I was almost embarrassed and ashamed of my head injury, and I didn't want people to know. If you can consider, or if you compare it to like an athlete, and I know you were an athlete, Ben, and you also did suffer a head injury. But imagine if you're a hockey player and you lost both of your hands, you know, you essentially can't play hockey anymore. For me, like, being in medical school was like a mental athlete. So the one organ, you know, my most important organ was my brain. And, you know, that became the organ that was in question for me. So it was really like an uphill battle. And, you know, at the time, head injury had a very, very bad, or, you know, not the best stigma behind it. And it was a lot of, you know, people just automatically counting me out for being able to return to med school and be successful. Even when I did return to med school, I remember, like, some of the profs coming up to me. One distinctly, I remember her saying, like, oh, Matt, like, how are you? Like, I heard about your injury, your back. You know, how do you feel? And she's like, well, I know you'll never be the same ever again. And to me, it was just like, wow, you're already just saying that right off the bat. So was this the area of medicine that I wanted to focus on? No, it wasn't at all. Like, I always told myself, as soon as I recover from this brain injury, I want, you know, nothing to do with the brain. I just want to kind of erase this part of my life and pretend like it never happened. But then over time, like, as I started to heal, and, you know, I became fascinated with the brain as I was recovering, because what the thought was early on was that the brain didn't have this capacity to heal. And, you know, it's more a static organ, and what you're born with in terms of brain cells is what you die with, and you can't create anything new. So, I really started to love the brain, and I figured I have all this insight and knowledge that I've gained through my own experience. Why not share this with the world to help others recover?
You talk about the stigma in a different way than I have before when it comes to head injury. For me, from the sporting world, it's more of just not disclosing the injury. That's kind of the stigma. But I haven't really looked at it in the angle you've given, which is the stigma of other people assuming you won't recover. Other people assuming you won't be the same person, which sounds like you leverage similar to myself, that people thought you couldn't. And I think there's a lot of value in that. I think it comes back to the knowledge piece, right? And I know I'm getting a little bit philosophical before we hop into the science side of this conversation, but I think that's interesting when other people doubt you, and other people may doubt you because of being limited knowledge, not understanding how the brain can change. Maybe that's part of it, or maybe they're just stuck up. But if you harness yourself with that knowledge, you will all of a sudden start to see opportunities. And again, on this philosophical lens of the hero's journey, I just find it interesting how those little bits of knowledge were, in a way, stepping stones for you to continue to pursue this journey to recovery and ultimately get to where you are today. So these little bits of knowledge can help you see opportunities. I think that's really cool. But I'll stop chatting. Obviously, I love the philosophy side, but you were about to go into what seemed like extremely powerful knowledge for people. So yeah, the pillars that you discovered along your way, I'll hand things over to you.
So there are five pillars, and to talk about each one extensively would take more than a podcast. We'd have to have a series of podcasts for that. But the main one I'd say for me, and this was the most powerful one for me, was learning about the effects of aerobic exercise on the brain and its ability to change. So through all of my research, let me step back a little bit. So where I really learned that neuroplasticity was possible was through the first book that I had read upon emerging from the coma. And that was a book called My Stroke of Insight, which is about a neuroscientist who basically, changed her brain over the course of 8 years after suffering a massive stroke and made a full recovery. So that's kind of where I was like, you know what? It is possible to recover from brain injury or a stroke or the like. And then from there, I started reading a bunch of other books. And what really became my Bible during my recovery was a book called Spark. It's called Spark, The Revolutionary New Science of Exercise in the Brain. And what Spark talks about is this school district just in the outskirts of Chicago. And this particular school district, there was nothing remarkable about it. It's not like the students were like any smarter than any of the other students in other school districts. And it wasn't like they put more money into the school district, but basically there was a gym teacher that completely changed the gym program around in this school district. And he had all of his patients run 2 miles before starting class. And basically, to make a long story short, what they found was that this particular school district, on standardized international testing, the students scored, I think it was like number 3 in math, number 1 in science in the world. After changing their gym program.
Wow.
So then it talks about the principles of neuroplasticity and stuff and the effects of aerobic exercise on the brain. And from there, I started looking into the literature. And what I came to know was that aerobic exercise, so that's exercise which elevates the heart rate above a certain threshold, actually creates brain cells, which is a process called neurogenesis. And not only that, but it also upregulates all the different hormones in your brain that improve mental processing. So dopamine, serotonin, norepinephrine. It also increases blood perfusion to the head. So brings more oxygen and nutrients with it. And then it also has a profound effect on your mental health. So, and it's anti-inflammatory. So all these things together have this enormously positive effect on the brain and its ability to heal. So taking this principle and the principles of Spark, I started running every morning. So I would run 5 kilometers every morning, and then I would, you know, this was the whole principle behind that, was to create new brain cells and prime my brain to learn. And then I would go home after exercising, and you know, I still suffered cognitive fatigue at that point in time. And so I would take a short little nap, and then I would start my cognitive exercise for the day to fill those newly created brain cells that I had made with meaningful information. So that became the basis of my recovery, along with some of the other pillars that I was doing.
So I want to go into those other pillars briefly. And again, if so, we have to do another podcast, so that's fine. But the way you told that story, and you're going to hate me by the end of this for all the philosophical approaches I take to this, but I think one of the, we know this with behavior, and this is, you could take this with concussion or anything else, but we'll just tell people with rational reasoning to, hey, go do this, go do it. And there's really no deeply rooted emotional or motivational buy-in. But the way you just said, you know, if you tell someone, hey, I want you to go for a run, it almost becomes a prescription. It's not just an activity at this point, right? Running aerobic or whatever form of aerobic training someone takes, and you're able to say, you're going to row or you're going to run or you're going to swim to go create new brain cells. That completely shifts someone's viewpoint of what that exercise, aerobic specifically, is going to do for that individual. That is, like, right now, even talking to you, the way you just said, I was creating brain cells and then I was going to fill those brain cells with information, you just painted an incredibly powerful picture for someone. And I think beneath it all, that maybe even be the most powerful, is it's actionable and it's tangible.
As I edited this episode, I wanted to make something clear in this conversation. It's relevant to head injury. It's also relevant to many other things. And that's the difference between positive motivators, negative motivators. And this has come up on the podcast many times. Positive motivation is that trying to win. Negative motivation is that trying not to lose. And in the head injury space specifically, we see so often that people will use this negative motivation being, what if I don't get better? And in comparing the two, yes, negative motivators may be more powerful biologically to avoid pain, to avoid mistakes, to avoid getting hurt. Yes, that may be stronger in the short term. But what becomes an issue is when you're using a negative motivator and you do not have an actionable. You don't have something you can do that responds to that negative motivation. So now you have this negative motivation, this fear, this trying not to lose approach, and nowhere to go, no actions to take. And so if we flip the script in the way Dr. Galati's talking about this approach to healing, this approach to recovery, this approach to improvement, is this positive motivation is, what could I be? Sometimes it may be a little bit hypothetical, but what could I be? And then bringing that into the present moment of giving yourself actionables, and further, which I think Dr. Galati does an amazing job of, is makes things tangible. So instead of deciding to go for a run because someone told you it was healthy and good for your brain and you're trying to avoid the dark future people are telling you you're going to have, you've decided to go for a run because of what you could be and because tangibly you could make more brain cells. There's a big difference there.
You just sparked something in my mind, for no pun intended, but yeah, I mean, it's really, it goes back to what we were saying before about knowledge is power, and you're empowering your patients by giving them that information and telling them that, hey, listen, if you do this, you could take your own recovery into your own hands and you can actually make a difference on your own. You know, people are powerless. When I was going through it, no medical professional had even mentioned the concept of neuroplasticity to me. I still, until I got home, had zero clue that the brain had this potential to recover. So if somebody had told me early on, like, you know, if you start running and exercising, you can essentially create brain cells. You can make a huge difference. That would have, you know, I would have started exercising even earlier than I actually did. So it is a powerful thing.
And so many questions come to mind as we continue here. And one that I have to ask, because I think listeners would be thinking this, is when you said you hopped into running, was there, and I know I did some work in the head injury space with some doctors from U of T that align exercise and concussion. And one of the common questions is, well, when could I start running? And maybe this is an anecdotal answer, maybe more empirical, but you know, could you run with some symptoms still lingering? Is that as bad as maybe we once thought?
Really, with the brain, whether it's concussion or whether it's more moderate to severe traumatic brain injury, earlier intervention is better. The earlier that you start moving and exercising, the better your outcome is going to be. There are protocols out there, such as the Leddy protocol by John Leddy in the States, and his work is around concussion. And basically, he gauges somebody's ability to exercise based on their symptoms. You do push a little bit. But if you start experiencing symptoms, you know, that is your threshold. And then hopefully you can push a little bit more the next day. The odd thing is, with moderate to severe brain injury, it's not associated with as much that same symptom profile that you get with mild traumatic brain injury or concussion. So theoretically, people with moderate to severe brain injury, because they don't experience, you know, so much that dizziness, nausea, vomiting, there's less limitations to exercise, which is an odd concept based on symptoms, at least.
I mean, it's almost, when people ask me about what I went through, and I had two subdural hematomas and an epidural hematoma, and it's like, people will say, well, you had a concussion. And because of my limited knowledge in that field, I'm kind of like, yeah, I get, sometimes I just chalk it up as a concussion because it's easier in everyday conversation. But it definitely an interesting point, because I think the social innuendos or the social understanding of concussion and head injury is that concussion isn't as bad as other sorts of quote unquote head injuries. Interesting how what may be perceived to be not as serious as a concussion can be more complicated in taking those steps to recovery potentially. I don't know. Am I wrong?
No, you're completely right. But well, first of all, Ben, did you, I'm just curious now, because so you had a moderate to severe brain injury, more on the severe side. Did you have symptoms?
So it's interesting, because I could have had the symptoms because I was on anti-seizure medication through a lot of the early recovery. And so who knows if those were feeding into some of the fatigue and drowsiness and so on and so forth, some memory stuff.
Well, fatigue because... and drowsiness, yeah, and cognitive symptoms, those are different. But I was talking more about the symptom profile, like the dizziness, the headache, stuff like that. Those symptoms are more associated with mild traumatic brain injury. But the cognitive stuff, the memory, the attention, you know, the cognitive fatigue, that all still presents with moderate to severe brain injury.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. And it all for me, as I was, I mean, I was also doing, ironically, you know, pushing the envelope a little bit, I guess you could say. And so looking back and seeing where research is at today and what people are really, as you're saying, you know, I was kind of doing that off a whim because at the time I thought I need to get, just like you, I need to get back to what I want to do in life. And so I'm going to push the envelope a little bit. And so that's why when I read your story, I thought I have to reach out because there's so many similarities here. And also I could pump my tires that I did something similar to what a medical doctor does. So it makes me feel good about myself.
Absolutely. Well, you know that, but there's something to be said about that because in some instances, and you notice this with not just with head injury, with any type of disease, patients or survivors really become experts on their own pathology because they're the most heavily invested. They're the ones doing the most up-to-date research or looking into the most up-to-date research because, you know, at the end of the day, for medicine, a lot of the times, you know, doctors put in their shift and they go home and, you know, they're not doing that extra work to look into, you know, what the latest and greatest evidence is for their patients. But, you know, if you're the survivor, you're going through the situation, it's close to home for you, you are more inclined to do that research. Right. And to that note, based on what you were saying before, like to your point about how you had worked with some people in the concussion field, and, you know, there's some question as to when to start exercise. A lot of doctors will take a more conservative approach just because, number one, most of these doctors haven't been through concussion and or head injury themselves. So they're coming at it more from a medical standpoint and based on, you know, the literature versus their own personal experience. But for me, I have both, you know, the medical side of things and that personal experience. And I do think that I have less of a conservative approach when it comes to prescribing exercise at an earlier stage for concussion and brain injury, because it does have these profound effects. And I know from my personal situation, I did push the boundaries and I pushed through some of those symptoms and it paid off.
So now that leads into the other pillars that I know this one's the big one, the aerobic exercise, which we're also going to get into with what you're doing today to try and make change. But what were the other pillars? Could we briefly touch on those? And again, people can maybe do their own research on those, but what were the other things that helped you?
Yeah. So, from all of my research, you know, the five things that are really, really essential for to help the brain heal and recover and change are cognitive exercise, then practicing good sleep hygiene and limiting harmful exposures such as drugs, alcohol, smoking, and, you know, even some other things like making sure you're eating foods that are high in pesticides, organic. And then there's also mindfulness meditation, which is neuroplastic in and of itself. And then the last one is nutrition. So aerobic exercise, cognitive exercise, sleep and limiting harmful exposures, mindfulness meditation, and nutrition, brain healthy diet.
Awesome. Now if you can package that up, going back to what we continue to come back to is basically making yourself, I'll use my subjective philosophical view, make yourself the hero of your recovery. But in your case, you know, take your recovery into your own hands. That's a pretty awesome spread of tangible things and actionables that someone can take once they leave that hospital. And further, once they leave that hospital, maybe with some pretty daunting news and not many actionables to take with them. That's pretty powerful.
Yeah, for sure. The beauty of it is you're putting the power back in the person's hands versus in the hands of a pill, which, you know, there's no medication that's going to cure you from a traumatic brain injury. This is a drastic lifestyle overhaul. And that is the most significant and powerful way to heal the brain, by changing your lifestyle. And it doesn't just end with, you know, healing yourself from a brain injury and returning back to a meaningful life. It's an ongoing lifestyle change. You know, I will always live a brain healthy lifestyle because, you know, yes, I may have healed myself from a brain injury, but you're always battling age. You know, with age, you have cognitive decline. Your brain starts to atrophy if you don't exercise it. So it starts to shrink a little bit. So we're constantly in this battle between building new brain cells and shedding brain cells. So it's an ongoing lifestyle change that, you know, never stops.
So powerful. Now, you touched briefly on mindfulness, and I want to dive into that just a little bit because it's such a buzzword today. You know, in Western world, we think we're so innovative, you know, utilizing different forms of mindfulness, even though it's been around forever. And so when it comes to that, what does that look like? And the reason I ask is I think many people think, oh, well, they have to sit down for an hour and do some type of mindfulness meditation. What are the forms that you have used or that you would recommend to people going through some sort of head injury or even behavioral health crisis?
Yeah, I mean, with head injury, patients a lot of the times lack self-motivation. And, you know, to be honest with you, early on in my recovery, and even to today, I'm still using guided meditation apps like Calm and Headspace because it really helps you guide you through the process. But there's also just simple ways to meditate too. So, you know, when you're lying in bed before you go to bed, just focus on all of, you know, the parts of your body moving from your head down to your toes. Mindfulness, the whole concept behind it is really filtering out ruminating thoughts on the past and worrying about the future and allowing your brain to focus on the present. And the reason why mindfulness is neuroplastic is because you're not getting caught up in those distractive thoughts of past and future. You're focusing on the present. So your brain is actually able to focus on creating new neural pathways.
Wow. Again,
does that make sense?
Yes. Again, you paint such a powerful image and it makes it actionable again of, well, I'm not going to go do mindfulness because I saw five social media people tell me to go do it. I'm going to go do it because if I can get into the present without forcing myself there, but relaxing into it, I'm now allowing my brain to create pathways in the present moment.
Absolutely. So to that note, you know, the whole concept of neuroplasticity is analogous to a skier or a tobogganer going down a ski slope. So like covered with a fresh powder of snow. So each time a skier goes down the same path, that groove in the snow becomes reinforced. Similarly, when you're creating new neural pathways or learning a new skill, the more it's like the age-old saying, you know, practice makes perfect. And you know this from hockey, right? The more you do something over and over again, the better you become at that task because all those connections in your brain and between the brain and the body are becoming stronger and stronger. So by allowing yourself to focus on the present and focus on creating that neural pathway and, you know, reinforcing that neural pathway, you know, that is essentially the concept of neuroplasticity.
And I think on a both concussion side, when it comes to recovery on a concussion side and a behavioral health side, it is not that motivating to take action if the instruction is to do it just to be okay. If it's to get to an okay point. But the way you're talking about it, it makes it almost a challenge. It makes it do this to become better than you are, not just to be okay, but to become great, right? Like that is so much more motivating.
Absolutely.
And empowering. And that's as you're speaking and you give it this visual side and tangible side. It's like, yeah, I want to make those paths in my brain stronger. Like that it makes it, yeah, I want to go do that. I don't want to, if it just, hey, go do it just so that you can be okay. And I think that's what I'm taking from the way you're delivering this. I think it's
absolutely
so good.
And And that is the reason why the brain healthy lifestyle does not stop with healing your brain from an injury. It's an ongoing process. You know, you can essentially make yourself improve your functioning beyond what it was before. Like, for example, when I returned to medical school after suffering a severe traumatic brain injury, and I rewrote one medical exam just to prove that to the medical administration that I was back. My mark actually improved by 10% from the year before. So, and that just goes to show you the incredible effects that these lifestyle pillars can have on the brain. You can essentially, make yourself smarter, for lack of a better way of putting it.
I wanted to add my own two cents here, and I think it's because I haven't been quite philosophical enough. So I wanted to bring in the heroic philosophy and heroic psychology a little bit here when it comes to this idea of goal setting or the reward, which in the 12 steps of the hero's journey, you have the seizing of the sword, which is the reward. So I'll get a little philosophical here, but I'll tie things back into something really powerful that Matt just said. And so after defeating the enemy, surviving death, and finally overcoming his greatest personal challenge, which can be the individual's challenge at the present moment, the hero is ultimately transformed into a new state, emerging from battle as a stronger person and often with a reward. The reward being an object of great importance or power, knowledge, or even reconciliation with a loved one or ally. So the hero leaves the ordinary world in the mythological sense, goes on this heroic journey, comes back to the ordinary world enhanced as something greater. And then the passage continues to say, the hero, though, must quickly put celebrations aside and prepare for the next leg of his journey. So where this becomes very interesting is celebrating the little victories is not celebrating in a hedonistic, pleasure-seeking sense. And really, I would argue in heroic philosophy, that's not even the goal in the hero's journey. The goal is to become something greater through the trial and tribulation. And of course, this needs to be realized before the journey. So that is what's fueling you. So I hypothesize in conclusion here that setting out to do something with the goal of increasing your strength, both mentally or physically, as a human, will target your deep-rooted motivation much more than the temporary feeling of pleasure or some type of external idea. And I think that's super important in what Dr. Gladdy's saying, because that doing better actually than he did previously is simply a stepping stone, proving to himself that he can continue to grow and strengthen towards the long-term goal of becoming a medical doctor. Very sustainable and extremely powerful.
You did touch on running. That is probably the easiest for an able-bodied person. That is, of course, that is probably the easiest form of aerobic training or exercise to jump into. Now, are there other forms that work? Like, this idea of aerobic training isn't one form of exercise, I would assume. But then two, how about intensity and duration? Do we know roughly any type of guidance on that for people?
And this is, thanks for bringing this up, Ben. This is a very important point, because there are people who go through a motor vehicle accident and they suffer more than just a brain injury. You know, they lose a limb, they can't walk. So luckily for them, there are different ways to do aerobic exercise and to achieve an aerobic threshold necessary to create new brain cells. So it doesn't matter what the exercise is. It could be anything from rowing to, using the arm bike to running, to using the elliptical, to swimming, to climbing. Anything that you can do to elevate the heart rate above that certain threshold, it will create new brain cells and do all those other things that are neuroplastic that I discussed before, such as upregulating all those hormones in your brain that improve processing, increase perfusion to your head, and oxygenation, and reduce inflammation. And then you had a question about intensity as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for mild concussion, there's a little bit more research out there. And if we're going to look at John Leddy's protocol, for example, he speaks to at least 3 to 5 days a week, 20 minutes at a time of aerobic exercise based on their symptom profile. So based on, he has, it's called the Buffalo treadmill test. And that's how he gauges somebody's tolerance for exercise. Moderate to severe brain injury. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of evidence out there on dosing, which is why I've taken it into my own hands to do research with, you know, Dr. Robin Green, who is the candidate chair of traumatic brain injury, whose research study I was a part of when I was a patient at Toronto Rehab. And what our research around at Toronto Rehab is finding the precise dosage of aerobic exercise in combination with cognitive exercise necessary to, or most beneficial to heal somebody from moderate to severe traumatic brain injury. So that evidence is going to be coming to light soon, and hopefully it's going to change the standard of care for moderate to severe traumatic brain injury.
And let's take that further. So how is it, what is the model? I know now we can get into the exciting, well, not that this hasn't been exciting thus far, but the projects you're working on and how you are ultimately continuing to take matters into your own hands in this issue. So what is it you're doing today in conjunction with this research that you're also powering or empowering to be completed?
Yeah. So it all starts with the research. So when I graduated from residency in 2018, and again, over the course of my medical school and residency training, I've always had a good relationship with Toronto Rehab, and I've kept in touch with Dr. Robin Green. And over the years, she's kind of always asked me, like, you know, how did you make such a great recovery? Like, you're really an outlier. We don't see a lot of severe brain injury patients returning back to a school program as demanding as medicine, and making nearly a full recovery. And so over the years, I would talk about these pillars that I held dear and about the effects of aerobic exercise in the brain. And, you know, she did over the years become a proponent of aerobic exercise and the brain and brain injury recovery. So when I graduated from residency in 2018, she reached out and said to me, well, you know, that now that you've graduated, why don't we do research around some of the pillars that you use to recover to see if we can change the standard of care and the outcome for traumatic brain injury patients moving forwards. So that's where our research started. But anytime you're doing research to change the standard of care, it's expensive. So originally I started a nonprofit called Brain Changes as a way to fundraise for this groundbreaking research that we're doing at Toronto Rehab. But it kind of evolved into this larger beast where it now serves as an avenue of awareness, education, and support for traumatic brain injury patients, survivors, their families, medical practitioners, and even people who just want to live a brain healthy lifestyle. So a little bit more about Brain Changes. So in addition to this education bit and, you know, the fundraising initiatives that we do, we really strive to, educate the population about the brain healthy lifestyle, not just through information on social media platforms and, you know, on our website, but also through example. So we started hosting these runs every Sunday, and we call it Brain Gains. And basically, it's a neuroplastic run. So
you know, there's three different levels. So it's a 2K, 5K, and 10K run. It's all one continuous run. You drop off where you feel appropriate. And intermixed is all these plyometric strength training exercises. So basically the entire exercise, whereas like the runs and the strength training, they're all geared towards elevating the heart rate and creating new brain cells. And then we do a lot of education around the runs itself. So it's not just educating through words. It's showing people, hey, we're actually living a brain healthy lifestyle. This is how you do it.
Can people, here's a question for you, and maybe you've been asked this before, but if someone isn't in the geographical area that they can join groups like this, is there other ways people can use your resource to find information and guidance on living a brain healthy life, whether that's due to concussion or just generally wanting to live a brain healthy life?
So in terms of finding resources and information around living the brain healthy lifestyle.
Yeah.
But we do a lot of education on our social media platforms, our main one being Instagram. So you could follow us at Brain Changes. And we dedicate each week to a different pillar. So we rotate through the pillars and we do informational posts on each pillar. So the way it's structured is the first information post for the week is on the problem. So explaining, you know, for example, which area of the brain is affected or an area of the brain that is affected with traumatic brain injury. The second informational post for the week will be the solution to that problem. So what you can do to help with that area of the brain, for example, that is damaged. And then the last information post for the week is dedicated to talking about a resource that can be found in the community that helps with that specific topic in question. So that's our main educational platform right now. We also have blogs on our website, and our website is brainchanges.org. It serves as a resource and an accessing point for patients looking for information around traumatic brain injury.
I will obviously put the link in the description for people to interact with Brain Changes Initiative. I think it's so awesome. And I know you and I are going to discuss the potential of starting a similar running group in the Waterloo area to start to Absolutely. Grow this. Because I think it's, as you said, it stems well beyond just the head injury or concussion reasoning for making this lifestyle change, as we know. So, Is there anything? Is there anything else? Is there a big picture goal? Like, what is the with this brain changes? Let's say you harness this research. What is the ideal? What's the end game for you?
Well, I just wanted to touch on your last point, Ben. And maybe it also touches on this question that you're asking me now, but I think for too long, all these individual organizations, focused on brain injury or mental health, they've all, acted in silos. But the real way to make change and to, enforce all these brain healthy lifestyle factors and to really help people is to create a community and to join forces with like-minded people and forces. So I love what you're saying about creating, and we did speak about this before, about creating the a similar run in the Waterloo area that'll be a Heroic Minds Brain Changes collaboration. That would be amazing. Yeah, I think that the ultimate goal is to, number one, change the standard of care for traumatic brain injury patients and to show people that neuroplasticity and changing the brain is possible and to empower patients. The other goals are to change the stigma and to create a community, a worldwide community for brain injury.
And the best part is it'll have the same purpose as you go from Waterloo to who knows where you go next, because the end goal is when people are going through this mild, traumatic, whichever, that the goal is to still, let's empower people with information and not just the information in cold stop. It's information and also actionables and tools, which we know is what people need, and to allow them to take control of their recovery, even if no one else believes in them, which we've seen so many times. So for you to, on your own terms, and I know this right now for you is very much pro bono, and you have your own practice, really makes you the hero of your story, and now ultimately a hero for other people. So this entire conversation is, as you know, close to my heart, and I'm just excited to, you know, align with what you're doing, but then also see where you're going to take it. And to, I know you're not the only doctor in the space wanting to make exercise a form of almost prescribed and an intervention that can really make change and do the research to have it empirically reinforced. So I wish you the best on this journey. I'm excited to be a part of it in any way that I can, and continuing to make head injury and brain injury recover that much better for as many people as possible.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me, Ben. And on that last point, I just wanted to say that, you know, the brain is a very complex organ, but, you know, the beauty of it is that it can almost be simplified in that what's brain healthy is brain healthy, whether you have Alzheimer's disease, depression, anxiety, a head injury, you know, severe, moderate concussion. All these lifestyle pillars apply and will help with, you know, all levels of brain pathology. So that's the exciting thing about these lifestyle pillars and about what we're trying to do through brain changes. It extends so far beyond head injury.
That brings us to the end of another Heroic Minds podcast. If you want to follow along with the Brain Changes Initiative, the link is in the description of this episode. And if you want to keep the conversation going further, send me an email, ben@heroicminds.live. That link is also in the description. Thanks for listening. I'm Ben Finelli. This is the Heroic Minds podcast. We'll talk again soon.